And a very good morning to you. I hope you're well. It's Sunday morning, the 27th of May 2018. It is glorious here in Manchester. I've said that quite a lot recently. Beautiful weather we're enjoying again. Little bit wet yesterday. We had a bit of a break in it yesterday morning, or was it Friday? It was Friday, actually. But it's glorious. I hope it's nice wherever you are, and I hope you're having a nice weekend. This is Sunday View, where I take a look at the front pages of the country's broadsheet and tabloid newspapers and look at one or two of the stories inside as well. Slight change to the show today. Want to talk about something very important at the beginning of the show. You know Alison Chablow, who's been on this programme several times, the comedian, the singer-songwriter, the satirist. Well, she was convicted on Friday. In that case, that ongoing case, the CPS were prosecuting her over her YouTube videos and her songs. Tell you more about that in a second. As usual, during the course of the programme, if you've got something to tell me, use Twitter to do so. My Twitter handle is at Richie Allen Show. That's at Richie Allen Show if you want to tweet me. Good to be with you. Sunday View then. Let's do it.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Indeed, and I do want to hear those tweets, so get those tweets to me, please. It's at Richie Allen Show. Welcome to Sunday View, Fab Radio, TriggerWarning.tv and RichieAllen.co.uk.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on RichieAllen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, we're live on TuneIn Radio as well. Right. Let's just get rid of the music, because I don't know how long this is going to last. It should be an hour, but it might be longer. It might overrun. I don't know. It's a sweltering studio, though. You know, I don't have air condition in this studio. It's incredibly warm. I can't put the fan on because it makes too much bloody noise. These are first world problems. That's exactly what they are. Right, let's be serious for a minute then. Haven't written anything down. I wanted to say this from the heart because it means a lot to me. And I don't know Alison Chablow personally. I've never met her. But she's been a guest on this programme and I followed her story. And she's come to mean a lot to me personally. Her story. We live in tyrannical times. It's a cliche. It's something I say a lot. And I admonish myself later on. As most professional broadcasters, you look back, you're saying the same stuff, Richie, over and over again. Or using the same cliches. Tyrannical times. This country is a fascist state. It's always been a fascist state. But most people who live here, like the Republic of Ireland, like France, like every other state in the fascist United States of Europe, people are blissfully unaware of it. They don't know they're living in a tyranny. They don't know they're living in an open-air prison. But they are. But maybe after Friday's outrage at Westminster Magistrates Court, maybe more people will wake up to it. Alison was convicted on Friday of two counts of causing an offensive, indecent or menacing message to be sent over a public communications network. This is absolutely ridiculous, right? I'll talk more about it in a second. Bad enough that she's facing a prison sentence when she's sentenced next week. Unbelievable. But she's also had a curfew imposed on her and has to wear an electronic bracelet until the imposition of sentencing. Now, I had an email from Alison about 15 minutes ago. I'm glad I checked my email just before I came on. Ordinarily, I would have missed it. But she sent me this email this morning. I want to read this out. One thing about Alison Chablow. No matter what you think of Alison's point of view or her opinions, she's honest to a fault. You know, what I've come to understand about her and watching her from afar is when she says something, you can take it to the bank. It's the truth as far as she understands it. She wrote me this morning. Richie, if it's not too late to mention, if it's not too late, then perhaps it's worth mentioning the following. On Friday, the court, Judge Zani, imposed new bail restrictions requested by prosecution counsel Karen Robinson that I must reside at my address with a curfew from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. This would be controlled with an electronic tag. The court clerk made me sign a form with my phone number telling me the private electronic tag firm would contact me. Last night, gone 11, late last night, gone 11, There was a ring at the doorbell. My brave mother, aged 74, answered. A ginger-haired man and a blonde woman in camouflage-style uniform said, "Are you Alison?" "No," said my mother. "Why are you here so late?" said Alison's mother, understandably. "Are you Alison?" they repeated. So then I appeared with my phone. "Are you Alison?" I replied, "Yes." "What are you doing?" they said. "I'm filming you," said Alison. Both of them turned on their heels and ran. There's a man shouting, "You can't do that, it's illegal, you're on bail, the police will now come and arrest you." "I'm still waiting for the police to arrive this morning," says Alison. "No sign as of yet." "It's absolutely disgusting, the smears about my family in the press and now this. Surely it's another grave breach of my rights and those of my parents to be harassed in this way. I have not yet had my interview with the probation officer and the tag firm was supposed to contact me by telephone to announce their arrival. Simply more tactics to humiliate me. I've informed my solicitor and will keep him updated if I am again dragged off to a cell. All this for simply expressing my thoughts on musique. Speak soon, Alison." I told you it's a tyranny. It's a tyranny. You know the story by now. If you don't, briefly, she's a comedian, singer, songwriter, satirist. And this charity, which is an incredible thing to say, this Zionist witch hunt hate mob that masquerades as a charity, were initially behind the prosecution over Alison's satirical songs and the videos on YouTube. Initially, the Crown Prosecution Service had no interest in it because a crime wasn't committed, nobody was harmed, nobody was injured. But eventually, through incessant lobbying by the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism clown-in-chief Gideon Falter and his pals, they came to the conclusion that it was in the public interest to prosecute Alison Shablo, right? So I've talked at length about how utterly contemptible it is to me that this group, the CAA, Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, received charity status. Basically by asserting that they are an educational body. Please, right? I mean, that's laughable on so many levels. And it's a monstrous lie. They're not educating anybody. They ain't an educational body. They are at best a political lobbying organisation, but they're a lot worse than that. This band of idiots came together in 2014 when Israel was carpet bombing Gaza, murdering hundreds and hundreds of children and around about 2,000 Palestinians in total back in 2014. This is not mock outrage or fake outrage. Blowing children to pieces. And Giddy Falter, the Muppet who chairs this vile, anti-democratic, anti-human rights cabal, said he was outraged at UK media coverage of the Israeli genocide. Yeah? Not outraged at separating children from their fucking heads. No, outraged that the UK media had the temerity to report on it and to tell the truth about it. That children were being murdered with nowhere to go in the biggest open-air prison in the world, nowhere to hide. Bombed. And these clowns were outraged at the coverage of it, not outraged at the slaughter of children. So you have to be sick, right? You have to be mentally sick to take that side. Because most Jews I know don't take that side. And I know a lot of Jews. Right. You know, how could you not say, you know, yeah, I support the state of Israel and Israel's right to exist, but I can't abide by that. This is mass murder and it's indefensible. Nope. Giddy Falter and the band of Merry Muppets and those who privately funded the CAA, this is a Freudian slip, rather than stand up against apartheid and mass murder, they seek to chase and harass people who stand against it, who are sickened by it, by labelling them anti-Semitic. So they falsely accuse everyone of racism. Let's call it what it is, racism, not anti-Semitism, because Jews are not Semites. We shouldn't call it racism either because Jews are not a race. Jew, Catholic, Muslim is an identity group. You're born into it, indoctrinated into it. It's not an ethnicity. So it's not racism. They should say bigotry, but it isn't bigotry either. It's people expressing their opinions. So what we're seeing in this country, and I've said this before, please don't yawn when I say this because it's so deadly serious. We're seeing McCarthyism in this country. That's what Alison Shablo is experiencing, David Icke, Gilad Atzmon and many others. They tried it with me, but I'm not important. Right? So they didn't get fair. Not Falter, he didn't try it with me, but this Northwest Friends of Israel clowns, not a brain cell between them, tried to have me thrown off of Fab Radio. Fab Radio said, fuck off. Richie Allen's not going anywhere. Not that it would matter, because I broadcast from a private studio anyway. Fab could throw me off. Anybody, TuneIn could throw me off. Doesn't matter, I'll be here anyway. So McCarthyism. What wretched, worthless cowards these Zionist hate groups are. They wouldn't debate David Icke, told lies about Holocaust denial, produced no evidence, just smears, then they run and hide. I would commit suicide if I was so cowardly. If I was as rottenly, miserably cowardly as these guys are, I would top myself. I really would. I couldn't look in the mirror if I was these wasters. Pawn scum. And most UK Jews have never heard of these morons, nor would most Jews support their behaviour. And I know this to be true. Because I've got good friends in this city who identify as Jewish. When I say that, they laugh. They tell me to fuck off. And they don't abide by this behaviour. They don't know who these people are, most of them. You know? I think back to Salford. Last year, if I was the manager of the Lowry Hotel in Salford, which cancelled David Icke's talk, I'd have reported these people to the police for blackmail, threatening businesses and premises and venues that if they don't cancel speakers, people with opinions, if you don't cancel them, your business is going to suffer. A charity. Are you shitting me? Right? Right. Back to Alison. There is nothing hateful or inciting about the songs of Alison Shablo. They are satirical. Who could possibly claim that they were in any way harmed by hearing the songs? Like Alison, even though we have different opinions, I'm sick to death of the Holocaust. The Holocaust, the Holocaust. Never fucking ends. All the media covered the publication of yet another survivor's account of the concentration camps last week. There's another book. Some 95-year-old guy in America is writing a book about how he was tortured in Auschwitz. Please! I'm fucking sick of it. I'm sick to death of it. Every year, handful of films, Pinewood Studios, Hollywood, the same story over and over and over again. I was at the airport yesterday, went to W.H. Smith, fancied a bit of fiction for a change. I read so much non-fiction, I wanted a bit of Grisham or a bit of God knows what, a legal thriller to bury me head in over the bank holiday weekend. Mother of Jesus, on the bestseller list was half a dozen spy thrillers set in and around Nazi Germany. Fucking hell! It never ends. Right? It's an industry. Oh, Jesus. Read Norman Finkelstein, the Holocaust industry. By Norm, he nailed it. He nailed it. And his mother and aunt were at Auschwitz. This is not about desecrating or pissing on the memory of people who were tortured and starved to death by the Nazis. It isn't. It's about what the exploitation of that by Zionist groups. And Zionism is a racist, separatist, supremacist creed. Most Jews ain't Zionists. These people have cynically exploited the Holocaust for their own end, chiefly to suppress scrutiny and examination of Zionism and its crimes around the world and its influence in the US, the UK, France and Germany. Its influence is total in these countries. How do you know that? Look at Jeremy Corbyn. Ran and hide. Ran and hid. Ran away. Allowed Ken Livingstone be thrown under a bus. Naz Shah. Forced to capitulate publicly and prostrate on her hands and knees in front of these people. Because she said that America should adopt Israel, take Israel over there. What the fuck is wrong with that? Sick of it. Its influence is total. It has a total stranglehold over the political class here. take it on, question it, and its agents, like Giddy Falter, will seek to destroy you, your career, your livelihood. Look at Ken Livingston again. So a satirist, a comedian, has been convicted and faces jail. Right? This is what Giddy Falter said on Friday. Alison Chablow has dedicated herself over the course of years to inciting others to hate Jews. No, she hasn't. Full stop. Has not incited anybody to hate anybody. He says, principally by claiming that the Holocaust was a hoax perpetrated by Jews to defraud the world. She is now a convicted criminal. The verdict sends a strong message that in Britain, Holocaust denial and anti-Semitic conspiracy theories will not be tolerated. Monumental bollocks. How can you incite people to hate something or someone? It's ridiculous, isn't it? What are the people of the UK? A big mass of gelatinous fucking creatures at the bottom of ponds lying on their backs with no brains? That we can be influenced by Alison Chablow or anybody else? Oh, I heard a song. I fucking hate Jews now. Yeah, I heard Survivors by Alison Chablow. There I was just about to go to my neighbour's bar mitzvah, but I heard Alison's song, I'm not going now, the fucking Jews, huh? Bastards. This is lunacy. This is lunacy. It's a tyranny, is what it is. How could you possibly prove incitement to hatred? And the burden of proof must be on the accuser, right? Right? Preposterous to contend that anybody, Jewish or otherwise, was harmed by Alison's songs. Ludicrous. Offended, maybe, at best, but that's subjective. Don't you have the right to offend as much as be offended? Offended, were you? Okay, well, you know, next time you sing an Alison Chablow song, don't listen. Then you can't be offended. But to claim harm is astonishing. To make opinion illegal is tyranny. Tyranny in capital letters. Someone says they don't believe the Holocaust happened. So fucking what? The vast majority of people disagree with that. So either debate that person or ignore them. That is the essence of freedom. Hey, Alison. By the way, Alison Chablow has never contended that Jews were not murdered and targeted in Nazi Germany. She's never contended that. So you have issues with the story, Alison, do you? Well, let's have a debate about that. I disagree with you. Why do you think that, Alison? Is it because you hate Jews? No? Well, tell us why. Let's have a conversation. That's freedom. That's freedom. Alison is a revisionist. She calls herself a revisionist. She's a human being. She has a right to her opinion and to express it freely. Right? Madness, this, isn't it? Are you fed up with it? You're fed up with me ranting. This is deadly serious. The precedent that this clown judge set on Friday is devastating for the right to freedom of thought and to freedom of expression in this country. Thoughts are now illegal. Satire is now illegal. Alison Chablow does not deserve to be going through that. And if we don't stand up for people like Alison Chablow, people who make radio programmes, whether you produce them for the BBC or LBC or you're an independent content creator like me, if you don't stand up for her before you fucking know it, you are forbidden to do this, to talk about this and talk about that. How the hell did that happen? Well, you didn't say a fucking thing when a woman was convicted of hate crimes and faces a prison sentence. You never said a thing. So it's your fault. The British press coverage of it is a disgrace. There's not a testicle or a fucking ovary amongst any of the journalists who covered it. Brain dead. Fools. Nobody with the balls to call this out for what it is. A disgrace. Alison, it's terrible it's happened to you. They're never going to win, these people. I mean, they'll have their little, you know, victories they think are victories, but ultimately they'll never win. Spare a thought for Alison Chablow next week. Obviously, we'll be following it, and when there's any news about the sentencing, we'll bring it to you here on the Richie Allen Show. I'll be back in a minute with more.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markmajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
21 minutes past the hour. A lot of tweets on that. A lot of supportive tweets for Alison Shablo. Go to twitter.com where it says search Twitter. Put Richie Allen Show, all one word. Press enter and you'll see what people are tweeting to me there. I'm not going to go through all the front pages of the newspapers now because I'm not going to have a lot of time to do that. So I'm just going to jump straight in. A couple of things I want to talk about. Obviously, the abortion referendum, the referendum on whether the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution of the Republic of Ireland would be repealed. Well, the yes side won overwhelmingly. You'll know this by now. The referendum took place on Friday. The result was announced early Saturday morning. So a new abortion law will be in place by the end of the year, according to the Irish Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar. It was a landslide. Repealing the Republic of Ireland's constitutional ban on abortion. So the proposed legislation that's ready to go will allow abortions during the first 12 weeks of pregnancy and up to the 24th week in exceptional circumstances. The Irish Minister for Health, Simon Harris, will seek the Cabinet's backing this coming Tuesday to draft the new legislation. Varadkar, the Prime Minister, the Taoiseach, said Saturday would be remembered as the day Ireland embraced their responsibilities as citizens, as a country, the day Ireland stepped out from under the last of our shadows and into the light. The day we came of age as a country, the day we took our place among the nations of the world. Yeah. Yeah. Here's Miranda Green of the Financial Times. She was on the Andrew Marr sofa this morning. And she talked about this. Apparently, the media has been very triumphalist in its coverage of the Yes campaign's celebrations and the victory for the Yes campaign. Miranda Green, Financial Times journalist.
Well, that's right. And actually, they've gone to town with their photographs of the celebrating Yes campaigners and lots of Leo Varadkar, the Irish Taoiseach, talking about this as a moment where Ireland, in his words, comes of age. And looks reality in the face. And this Sunday Telegraph has done this nice double-page spread here. But it's got a very interesting piece by Ruth Dudley Edwards, which talks about the history of the Catholic Church having a grip on Irish society and how that's been changing over the last few decades. And this is like a moment in that ongoing story.
It's going to change the whole political mood on the island of Ireland for this to happen, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, the Republic has lots of strengths. It's a young country, it's put a lot into its education system, and now it seems to be sort of throwing off the shackles of a constitution which was supposed to protect morals, but actually was quite bad for women in lots of serious ways. And you know, obviously they have this kind of quite young, interesting sure. government leader at the moment as well, so they're sort of becoming a nation that wants to take its place in a new way.
A gay Taoiseach and all the rest of it.
All the rest of it, yeah.
A gay Taoiseach and all the rest of it. His sexuality has got nothing to do with it. He's an idiot. He's an idiot no matter what sexual orientation he chooses or where he comes from. An idiot. I believe, and I've said this a thousand times, I would not impose my will on the body of any woman or on what she can do. I've said this a thousand times, but I don't like the idea of people having abortion because they just can't be bothered having the child or because they want to have a different sex or because the child might have Down syndrome. I don't like that. Somebody who's raped or somebody who's carrying a child that has no chance to live, of course, should be allowed to have a termination. But it was never about that. I believe that it was all about allowing the multi-billion dollar abortion industry access to the Republic of Ireland, because it's a market that previously was denied to these lunatics. And a number of things came to light over the weekend about the Irish Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, or the gay Taoiseach, as Andrew Marr referred. I don't know why Andrew Marr said that. It doesn't matter what he is. Simon Harris, the Irish Minister for Health, and the former HSE boss Tony O'Brien. Apparently these three guys have links to companies that make morning after pills, but also companies that facilitate abortions, effectively. Tony O'Brien, the former HSE boss in Ireland, was the chief executive of the IFPA, which is an affiliate organisation to the Global Abortion Providers International Planned Parenthood. That's pretty strange, isn't it? The Minister for Health, Simon Harris, authorised the HSE boss, when he was HSE boss, Tony O'Brien, to join the board of Evofem, which is a company involved in the supply of abortion suction machines and abortion pills. Imagine that. You're getting the picture. There was a fundraiser to get Leo Varadkar elected as Taoiseach. It was organised by a guy called Thomas Lynch. Guess what? He was the director of the same company, Evofem. So these guys had links to, not just tenuous link, but links to those who are going to make huge profits out of Ireland rolling out abortion for people up to 12 weeks. You think it's not significant? You think I'm sitting here telling a woman what she has to do and what she doesn't have to do? No, I'm not. Don't think for a minute this is about women's health. It ain't. It's about far more than that. And it's about things so deep, I don't have the time to get into them now. 26 minutes past 11. The corruption is overwhelming. All he had to do was say, look, where the child is going to be, no chance of life, will have to help. Where there's incest, sexual abuse, rape, will have to help. They could have dealt with that. I'm not going to say any more on it. Front page of the Telegraph. 27 minutes past the hour. Government quietly planning for Britain to stay in the EU after March deadline, Eurosceptics fear. Do you think? Is that like saying today is Sunday? It's that obvious. The Telegraph writes the government is secretly planning to stay in the EU after it emerged that Whitehall officials have set aside hundreds of thousands of pounds to spend, wait for it, on next year's European Parliament elections. The electoral watchdog has been handed a budget of £829,000 to pay for its activities relating to the European parliamentary election in 2019. Wow. Right. The Commission said it had set aside the cash as a precautionary measure so that we have the necessary funds to deliver our functions at a European parliamentary election in the unlikely event that they do go ahead. What claptrap. These elections, by the way, are scheduled for May 23rd to May 26th next year. Britain is supposed to be leaving the EU on March 29th next year, but of course we're not at all. There's a transition period that's going to last for 275 years. Right, I'm bullshitting. It was 2 years, then it was 3 years. Now they're talking about a 10-year transition period. Think I'm lying? I've got some audio to play for you in a minute. It's never going to end. We ain't going anywhere. Here's Kerry Dingle. She's the director of World Right, and Kerry was on Sky News today. She is very much like myself in favour of a complete withdrawal from the European Union. Kerry Dingle talking about the Telegraph's revelations.
Well, it's an interesting headline in that I don't think ideas of staying in the EU have been very secret at all. We do, you know, the idea that Theresa May has been right behind some hard Brexit, I think, is a joke. Really, it just feels to me that, and to a lot of people I know, that the government's been on the brink of surrender to remain a lot of the time. And this is another example where the Electoral Commission, the Electoral Watchdog, it's clear, have already set aside a budget for Euro elections for MEPs. I mean, I doubt if it's that secret. It's quite transparent. They've set this aside, and it means these elections will be taking place after we're supposed to have left the EU, you know, so 829,000 been set aside for that. And I think it's part of an ongoing farce, really, where we've had literally transition forever. You know, the customs partnership idea, which really is stay the same by another name, single market by stealth, and all of which I think are very demeaning for the 17 and a quarter million of us who voted to for a clean break from the bureaucracy.
So you believe there really is a plot to remain?
No, I really don't think there's a plot. I think it's a continued, you know, degrading of what the will of the people was all of the time. And we think we know, you know, we know Theresa May was behind Remain in the first instance.
But if that was the case, why doesn't she just have all Brexiteers in the front bench? She's trying to have a happy medium, isn't she?
Well, she might be trying to make things look good, and she can talk the talk. You know, she will say Brexit is Brexit. She'll have a few of these and a few of those. But I don't think she's capable, and the government isn't capable of delivering on the will of the people. That's my point.
Not that they're incapable of delivering on the will of the people. They don't have any intention to deliver on the will of the people, to deliver the will of the people. There's no intention there. It's a charade. Now, Jacob Rees-Mogg, terminological inexactitude, darling. Jacob Rees-Mogg's supposed to be a Brexiteer, an out-and-out Brexiteer. Leave, completely leave. No customs union, no single market, leave. Supposedly. Jacob Rees-Mogg was on the Andrew Marr show today. Andrew Marr has been away ill. He's back at work, thankfully. And Marr asked Mogg this. Have a listen.
You said this week that you were seriously concerned as to whether the government actually wanted to leave the EU. Why did you say that?
Well, a lot of compromises have been made during the course of the negotiations. The government agreed to the EU's timetabling of the negotiations, agreed to a very large amount of money, and agreed to a transition period that included some things that we were told wouldn't be agreed. So on our side, we've made a huge number of compromises, and on the other side, as you've just listed, nothing has come in return. And that makes me concerned that it's all very one way.
But you've gone beyond that. You've said the government itself may have lost the will, in a sense, for Brexit.
Because it's difficult. And I was concerned that the withdrawal bill didn't seem to be coming back. That's now changed, that will come back in the middle of June. And I'm reassured in the last week. I think the government has made it clear that it is still committed. But there are concerns, inevitably, at the way the negotiations are proceeding.
And we've heard this week that the Cabinet has apparently agreed that as a backstop to the Irish border issue, if nothing else can be agreed, we might stay in something very, very like the customs union for years ahead, 2022 or beyond. Would that be acceptable to you?
That's a real problem, because the customs union on its own does not solve the seamless border issue. If you go and look at the Turkish border, which
because
is in a customs union,
alignment.
Absolutely right. You require regulatory alignment as well, and that means the single market. And so if we were to stay as a rule taker, as a vassal state, for an indeterminate period, that I think would not be delivering on Brexit. And if you offer a backstop that is more attractive than anything that you're likely to negotiate from the other side's point of view, the backstop ends up becoming the front stop.
Yes, right. All sounds good. Can't have alignment, because alignment would be not delivering on Brexit. That would be unacceptable, says Mogg. But listen very carefully to what you are about to hear. Marr then suggests to Jacob Rees-Mogg that walking away with no deal, effectively telling the EU to feck off, is actually illegal. News to me, this.
So there are problems with both of them. When it comes to the Irish border, you have said there is another answer, which is simply, if they are not going to negotiate seriously with us, we politely and courteously say thank you very much and we walk away. The trouble is, that is illegal, isn't it?
No, it's not illegal. What makes you think it's illegal?
Under the World Trade Organization rules, which we would certainly have to sign up to after leaving the EU, then if there is a customs union on one side and us on the other, there has to be a border, and if there isn't, every single member of the WTO could take us to court. It's 160 countries.
Hold on. You're confusing two things, if I may. You're confusing a border with a hard border. There already is a border. There is a border for excise duties, there is a border for currency, and there's a border for currency, among other things.
Right.
But if you look at Article 24 of the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, That has two exemptions that may be useful. One is for dealing with contiguous countries, and the other is in establishing a free trade agreement with a group.
So we'd have under to have a free trade agreement with the EU.
Hold on. Patience. What you have to do is great virtue, and virtue is a grace, and grace is a little girl who doesn't wash her face, as I'm sure your listeners will want here. But you can say we are working towards a free trade agreement, which we will be doing. And as long as both sides say this, you can then go on to say, and therefore we will, for an interim period, which can be up to 10 years, We will maintain the current arrangements, and that's perfectly legal. And actually, I discussed this on one of the BBC's other programmes last week with an expert, and we ended up agreeing that this was the case.
Yeah, that should be enough now for anybody who thinks that there's genuine opposition to Philip Hammond and Theresa May, that there are genuine Brexiteers. They're not. You heard Jacob Mogg straight from the horse's mouth there. He said the UK could do trade deals with the rest of the world on its own, which was the reason for Brexit and to stop freedom of movement. But to appease the EU, we would also sign a free trade deal with them that agrees to maintain the current arrangements for up to 10 years. Free movement, European Court of Justice supremacy, and adopt new EU rules and regulations for 10 years. Just in case you missed it, here's Jacob Rees-Mogg.
You can say we are working towards a free trade agreement, which we will be doing. And as long as both sides say this, you can then go on to say, and therefore we will, for an interim period, which can be up to 10 years, We will maintain the current arrangements, and that's perfectly legal. And actually, I discussed this on one of the BBC's other programmes last week with an expert, and we ended up agreeing that this was the case.
Treason from Jacob Rees-Mogg right there. Yeah, well, if the EU will just allow us sign our free trade deals, and if we can come to some free trade deal agreement with the EU, we'll be happy for up to 10 years to maintain the current arrangements. Right. So we won't be leaving then until sometime around 2029. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about UK arms sales to Israel. This is the Richie Allen Show. It's Sunday View live on Fab Radio 2, triggerwarning.tv, richieallen.co.uk, and TuneIn Radio. Sunday, May 27th, 2018. It's a scorcher.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
It is an absolute scorcher in the studio. It's very, very warm. It'll be pleasant, though, this afternoon, experiencing a bit of old sunshine there. A lot of tweets on this issue, the issue we've just been speaking about, Brexit, and Alison Chablow's plight as well. Go to twitter.com, where it says, Richie, where it says nothing, where it says search Twitter, put Rishi Allen Show, all one word in, press enter, and you'll see what people have been tweeting to me throughout the programme. All right, here's a very important story in the Sunday Observer today. British defence contractors are selling record amounts of arms to Israel. New figures reveal just days after it was confirmed that Prince William will represent the UK government on a visit to the country next month. Figures from the Campaign Against Arms Trade reveal that last year the UK issued £221 million worth of arms licences to defence companies exporting to Israel. This made Israel the UK's eighth largest market for UK arms companies, a huge increase on the previous year's figure of £86 million, itself a substantial rise on the £20 million worth of arms which was licensed in 2015. So they've gone from 20 to 86 to £221 million worth of sales to the apartheid, wretched, racist state of Israel. Lovely, eh? Wow. Over the past 5 years, Israel has bought more than £350 million worth of military hardware from the UK. Wow. Licenses issued to UK defence contractors exporting to Israel last year include targeting equipment, small arms, ammunition, missiles, weapon sights, sniper rifles, anti-armour, ammunition, gun mountings, components for air-to-air missiles, targeting equipment, components for assault rifles and grenade launchers and all the rest of it, eh? Fuck the Palestinians, eh? Fuck them. Yeah, we'll give you all this stuff, yeah. We don't care what you do with it. We just don't care. That's how fucking insane we are. We're going to give you all this stuff. But I've got a house. I've actually got a house in the Hamptons. Yes, I'm a UK arms manufacturer, but I've got a house in the Hamptons in New York. Yes, I do. I do. And I have a villa in Marbella. Yes, yes. I don't give a fuck that that money came from the removal of people from their bodies. Madness. Fucking madness. Ashok Kumar is an economist, Oxford University. He was on Sky News newspaper review today. He was sitting alongside Kerry Dingle. We heard from Kerry earlier on. Ashok Kumar had a lot to say about this story on Sky News today. I think you might like hearing from this guy.
Yeah, so this, I think, is an absolutely outrageous story. You've had record numbers on record of British arms and contractors selling to Israel. 221 million sold. And David Miliband a few years ago said that these are definitely being used to murder Palestinians. And in recent months, we see that over 100 Gazans have been murdered peacefully protesting, over thousands injured by snipers. And on top of that, we have Prince William, who's planned effectively a kind of propaganda whitewashing tour, 5 days in Israel. And so I think it's, you know, it's really telling about the priorities, the international priorities, and the morality of our country, our country's policies, when instead of our country and the UK profiting off of the death of Palestinians and this occupation, we should be boycotting, divesting, sanctioning and isolating this pariah state.
Yes.
Until Palestinians have the right of return, which is recognized by international law, and an end of a 70-year occupation.
Hamas did say that they sent their fighters over, though. Or attempted to send their fighters over.
Okay, so firstly, Hamas is the democratically elected leadership in that country. It's the idea that Hamas would have nothing to do with things that happen in Gaza is...
That was a nervous cough from the female co-presenter, by the way. Right? Because somebody is screaming in the ears of the presenters. Gillian Joseph was one of the presenters and another man whose name I can't remember. And that was a nervous cough. Somebody in the gallery is shouting, shut him up. Shut him up. Move on. Move on. Can't have this. Move on, Gillian. Gillian, stop him. But he continues. I like this guy.
Gaza is absurd. Secondly, Hamas is often used as a kind of bait and switch. Hamas didn't exist until 87, wasn't armed until the early 90s. This has been going on for 70 years.
But Hamas are not some, you know, great good guys here. And I do think Israel is peculiarly singled out. You know, if you look at Saudi Arabia, if you look at what's happening
we
in Yemen.
We talk about Saudi Arabia all the time. Yes, and the fact is that that also
those
is outrageous. Still,
but the point is, Israel is being singled out as uniquely evil. And I don't think that helps the situation.
It's not uniquely evil. Of course it isn't. The UK is evil. we're talking about the governments now. We're not talking about the people. We have a tyrannical, evil government. So does Israel. So does Saudi Arabia. So does the United States. Israel is being singled out uniquely. Give me a break.
What's the situation if we would like to
Uniquely apologists for Israel, actually. We continue to arm them. We continue to defend them. We continue to send people to give diplomatic cover to them.
And you continually see Palestinians and paint them as the ultimate victim.
I'm not doing that. I'm saying these were peaceful protests, and they were massacred. Let us identify that for what it is and critique it, not arm them to do it more.
That's Carrie, do you think Prince William should be visiting?
I'm no fan of the royals. I'm sure they'll go all over the world and claim that they're doing their democratic duty, whereas I think the monarchy should be abolished.
That's another argument for another day, and we do not have time to get into that, so don't look at me like that.
We don't have time!
Let's move on to the Mail. This is your story, Kev.
Move on, Gillian, quick! Somebody's been talking about the carpet bombing of Gazans, Palestinians, and then this woman says we should abolish the monarchy. Gillian, if you don't get him off the air, you're fucking fired. Get him off. So she got him off. Let's move on. Sorry for shouting at you. It's 15 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. We're not going to make it to the top of the hour because I've only got one more story for you. And you'll forgive me finishing 5 or 6 minutes earlier today because the heat is unbearable. But I've only got one more story anyway. And this is so serious, this, you know. I came across this. I'm up early looking through the papers, but also I'm going through the channels. So RT, BBC, Sky, Press TV, CNN, a whole lot of them. See, is there anything that, you know, we need to know? RT have reported on something which is very serious. The US, now it's not just the US, it's the world, but the US has got an opioid epidemic. Addiction to opioids and painkillers, it does. Now, there's research has emerged from Seattle that suggests the local Seattle population is taking so much oxycodone that it's seeping into the local water supply, so people there are consuming opioids, whether they want to or not. Wow. Right? Okay. Listen to the report from RT.
There are enough opioids in the waters off Seattle on the west coast of America that shellfish there have tested positive for drugs. Scientists say it reflects the high numbers of people in the surrounding area who take the substance.
What we eat and what we excrete goes into the Puget Sound. It's telling me that there's a lot of people taking oxycodone in the Puget Sound area. It's coming likely from the wastewater treatment plants.
Clean muscles were put into more than a dozen locations in Puget Sound. Three of them were later confirmed to be contaminated. Wastewater management can't filter out the opioids. The muscles are unable to metabolize the drug, but other sea life can and may become addicted. Now, this is the first time scientists have discovered the drugs in shellfish there and believe it highlights the extent of the nationwide opioid epidemic in the US. There has been more than 200,000 prescription overdose deaths in the US since 1999. Between that year and 2016, overdose deaths have almost quadrupled. 650,000 opioid prescriptions are dispensed daily. Policy researcher Andrew Kolodny thinks that overprescription is behind the epidemic.
The real problem is not that you can detect oxycodone in shellfish. The real problem is that overexposing the United States to this highly addictive drug has led to an epidemic of opioid addiction and overdose deaths. In the United States, doctors are prescribing opioids for very common problems where opioids should not be prescribed. These are good medicines for treating pain at the end of life. They're good medicines when used for a couple of days after major surgery. But the bulk of the prescribing, the bulk of the consumption in the United States is for long-term common problems where opioids are much more likely to harm patients than help patients. If other countries increase prescribing the way we did in the United States, I'm afraid that they will follow in our footsteps.
Right. So why are these doctors then who are prescribing opioids, why are they not struck off the medical register? That's a very fair and rational question. You're prescribing incredibly addictive painkillers for people who don't really need them. Why? Of course, the answer lies in that medical rep that appears on the doorstep of Dr. Smith every 2 or 3 weeks and tells her or him what you should be prescribing. That's the way it is, you see. And I know this. I met several medical reps, former medical reps, in fact, former, who worked for some of these massive companies, GlaxoSmithKline, and they would bribe the bejesus out of doctors to get them to increase the prescription of certain drugs, whatever. I mean, it's almost like a bakery or a butcher putting meat or bread on special because it's about to go off. And they get doctors to do that. They say, look, we've got a whole shitload of this stuff we need to get rid of, so we need you to prescribe it a bit more. Why are they not being struck off then? And imagine what else is in the water. Other medicines that people are taking. We know all about antibiotics, which we get through eating meat and, you know, this is why you have this immunity to antibiotics, which is an absolute epidemic. Nobody should touch an antibiotic unless you're seriously ill. And you really need something to get rid of that bacterial infection. They have their place, they have their use. But we can't even determine that. I've not had an antibiotic for years and years. In case in the future, when I'm old and frail, if I live to be old and frail, that I might need one. And I'll need it to work. No chance now, because through the food chain and the water, I've had every antibiotic ever made, probably 20 times over. Madness, isn't it? Isn't it just a mad, lunatic asylum world that we live in? Oxycodone is showing up in the muscles in Seattle. What the fuck? Crazy times. I'm going to stop right there and wish you a happy Sunday. Look after yourselves and one another. Enjoy the sunshine if it is shining where you are. I know down south it isn't as pleasant as it is here, maybe. That's good for England's cricketers, by the way, who are struggling against Pakistan. I love my cricket. So a bit of rain wouldn't go astray there at Lord's. Have a great Sunday. I will be back with you on Tuesday because tomorrow is a bank holiday and I enjoy my bank holidays just as much as you do. So I won't be here, but I'll be with you on Tuesday at 7 p.m. UK time and I promise I will have two excellent guests and interesting topics on the table for discussion as well. Thanks so much for listening to this programme. Please pass it on when it appears on podcast and on YouTube. Let others listen to it as well. Have a great day. I'm going to leave you with some Lighthouse Family and a song called Ocean Drive because nothing sounds as summery as this song, at least to my ears. This is quite wonderful. See you soon then. See you Tuesday. Bye. And this programme is dedicated to Alison Shablow. We love you, Alison. Look after yourself. Don't bow down to them. It'll be all right in the end. See you Tuesday. Bye now. It's true, can't blue. I can share your situation. Been hold on our emotions, they will only make us cry. And you go, I know, but you know. Shine on everything you do. The sky is so blue. The sun's gonna shine on everything you do. Left you black and blue without a word of explanation. And he took your love for granted. Someday, well.
shine on everything.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Richie Allen